Hi everyone, Podchat Live, episode 124. I'm here as always with Craig, recording on the 30th of April, 2024. We're back, Craig. I'm back this week. I'm back to my. I'm full of beans. This week, I've actually read some of the articles we're going to talk about. Unlike last week, my apologies again for my jet lag state. How has your week been?
It's been really good. I actually managed a 10K run yesterday with no issues for the first time in since my last marathon.
Delightful. We're tracking in the right direction. We've got a bit of marathon chat coming up in a second, actually. But before I get to that, let's just quickly go through two things that we received. One was a message on email, and one was on social media. The first one was an email that we received from a good friend and previous podcast, I guess a guest, Luke Kelly. That's Associate Professor Luke Kelly at Griffith University in Queensland. And I love Luke. I think he's an absolute genius. I love his published work. He's an absolute gentleman. Every time I've met him, I've really enjoyed his company. And still blows my mind that someone of his stature would even listen to our podcast. But he sent us a lovely email just basically saying he's really enjoying the new short, sharp format. I love getting those messages because it kind of I'm enjoying doing them more. I think you are too, Craig, and it's good to know that people are not missing the old format. So yeah, if you haven't read Luke's work already, if you haven't listened to our previous episode that we did, I can't remember what number it was off the top of my head, but it was the one on intrinsic foot muscles. What episode would that have been, Craig? But it's still one of our most popularly listened to ones, isn't it?
Yeah, we did over 100 in that format, so I can't remember.
Exactly. Head back, you'll find it. It's brilliant. He's brilliant. So thank you, Luke. We also got tagged in an Instagram story from Zoe Wilson. She's of ZW Clinics up in the lovely Cumbria in the Lake District in the UK, and she took a photo of the podcast screenshot, and she was listening to us on her morning commute, which again is another thing that I never get tired of people telling me that. I convince myself after we sit here and record them, and then I close my iPad and I go to bed that no one listens to them. So getting that validation that people are actually listening is really cool, and I love the idea of people listening to us on their commute. So thanks, Zoe. Hope you're well. Right, in the news, it's coming on to a bit of running slash marathon chat. Again, previous guest and friend of both of ours, Tom DeCanto, TDC. He is, as I'm sure we've mentioned before, he's a fairly handy runner. And it was the Ballarat Marathon just last weekend, which I think is quite near you, if my geography serves me correct, Craig. Is
Yeah,
it?
it's about an hour away. Yeah,
Yeah, and I think it might have been the inaugural one from what I read online. I could be wrong on that. But anyway, Tom flew down from Sydney, and in his classic style, he won it. He won it with 2:17, which my calculations tell me is just clicking off just casual 3:15 minute kilometers, which is ridiculous. He is insane. Well done, Tom. We love your
So
work.
that's actually three times faster than what I did my day yesterday.
I don't doubt it. He's an absolute machine. Just a complete beast. The thing that fascinated me the most, I've always really enjoyed when I see his running photos. I've always really liked that run crew kit that they wear. He's always been in full black, with the Nike swoosh, and I think they've just had a merch or sponsor change because he was seen in a rather fancy tracksmith vest, and I love a bit of tracksmith as well. So I haven't spoken to him yet, but I might reach out and see if they've had a little sponsor change. I've got to get my hand on some of this Run Crew merch. It looks absolutely beautiful.
Oh, he's entitled to wear fancy stuff for running as well as what he does.
This is true. I'm probably not. You're quite right. Yeah. Marathon. Last bit of marathon chat. Bit of new. This was in the news, and it's about the London Marathon, which again we know Craig is still looking to come over and do. Have you got a place in it, Craig, or
Not
did it
yet, not yet, not yet, but working on it.
working on it? So the ballot was open. Obviously, London Marathon was when was it? It was 2 Sundays ago now, and the ballot for the next year opens on the day of the marathon. It stays open for nearly a week, so it closed on Friday last week. The London Marathon 2025, so next year, it's the 45th London Marathon. It is on the 27th of April, 2025. And they've just had a record number of applicants. So 840,000 people applied to do next year's marathon. That is a record. Last year was a record, and last year was 578,000. So it's dramatically more. Just crunched a couple of the numbers. So we know that this year, 53,000 runners completed or started the marathon. But actually, that isn't how many ballot places are up for grabs. It was estimated this year, or the application last year for this year's race, that there were approximately 17,000 ballot spaces. So my crude math tells me if there are 17,000 ballot spaces and there were 578,000 applicants last year, there was a 3% chance of getting in the ballot. This year, if we assume there's roughly the same amount of ballot places at 840,000 applicants, and one of those is me, by the way, our chances of a ballot place are down to 2%. Closer to zero than we'd like. And this will be about my sixth year of applying in a row and not getting a ballot place. Of course, you can run for charities, but the ballot places are looking increasingly slim. How are you gonna get in, Craig? Are you gonna do one of these
Oh,
sports tour companies?
sports tour, hopefully. Actually, I did read something, and I think I read it right. One of the reasons for the increased number of applicants this year was two actors from a UK soap, might have been EastEnders, actually ran it and were filmed for part of an episode. Did you hear that? Or and
I
that
did not. I'm not a soap opera watcher. So,
apparently the episode was filmed quite a while ago, except for the marathon part.
right.
And literally these two, the two, they ran the marathon. There were film crews along the way filming them. They literally went into editing that night, and the episode came out a matter of days later because everything else had been filmed. And that
Interesting.
increased awareness and publicity. Now, I'm not, I think it might have been EastEnders, but I'm not sure. So don't quote me on that. But yeah, like that is, but it is a massive increase in the number of
Well,
applicants for this year.
what is it? It's two, it's five, seven, eight, seven. It's nearly a quarter of a million people increase.
Yeah.
It will depress me if something like EastEnders has got that amount of influence on the public.
Oh,
That will,
true.
it wouldn't
Yeah.
surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me, but it will depress me.
Well,
Goodness me.
I'm intrigued to see the episode because see how they put it together. Yeah, because of the last minute filming in the marathon. Yeah.
There'll be people who run that marathon who may well be keen to see themselves on telly, because they must have caught some actual runners on it as well. No, I hadn't heard that story. I will do some investigating at this end. I'll ask some people that I know watch soaps, but no one in this household does. So I'll get back to you next week. Okay, let's talk about some of the articles, shall we? I don't think we've got anything else to talk about news-wise, have we?
No.
No, we haven't. Great. So three articles that caught our eye that have been published in recent times, which we'll go through now. The first one, we must have missed this because it wasn't last week. It was just the week before last. It was published on the 17th of April. It's an ahead of print publication in the journal Foot and Ankle Surgery, and it's from a group of researchers in Massachusetts. They're all from Harvard Medical School. It's called The Role of Insole Material in the Treatment of Plantar Fasciitis, a Randomized Clinical Trial. So what they've looked to do here is compare the effects on a fairly sort of short timeline of polyethylene, so PE, polyurethane, PU, and carbon fiber insoles. So three different insoles, and they've compared them. So they've taken a group of 45 patients, all of whom have plantar fasciitis. They've been randomly allocated into one of three groups. Now, all of these orthoses are prefabricated, so off-the-shelf devices. There are 14 in the carbon fiber group. The carbon fiber prefabricated insole they were given, I believe, is pronounced Victory. It's VKTRY. There were 14 in the PU group. And I believe that prefab they get given is pronounced Atrex. It's AETREX. And then there were 17 in the PE group, the polyethylene group, and that was Superfeet. We don't know what color. We don't have much more detail than that. They applied sort of four different outcome tools at baseline, and then at 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 12 weeks, and they were various tools that looked at pain intensity and pain interference, etc. Won't bore you with what ones they use. That's all in the article. And the article I can't. I think this one's open access as well. Now, what they found is that at 2 weeks, the PE group showed an improvement in pain intensity scores, and at 6 weeks, the carbon fiber group showed an improvement in pain intensity scores as well. So they've sort of concluded that those devices are more beneficial for patients with plantar fascia pain, plantar fasciitis. Couple of comments here. The first is, as we always say, there was no control group. We have very little information about other things that the people in these groups did, whether they were continuing daily life, whether they were doing any kind of rehab. Maybe some of them were having shockwave. We just don't know. It's just not that that information just didn't seem to be offered up. And the other thing that's worth noting is that and this isn't necessarily a negative thing, because in fairness to the authors, they did state this as a conflict of interest, but it was funded by the company that owned the Victory insole, the carbon fiber insole, which came out looking quite good. Not suggesting there's been anything nefarious there. The other thing, when I stuck this, when Craig had sent me the link of what this article was called, and I stuck it into Google to find the full text, I got confused because there are actually two full texts available with this exact same title by this exact group of researchers. And the first one was a shorter article, basically a conference abstract. Same authors, in the same order, exact same title, published in a different journal, published in Foot and Ankle Orthopedics in December 2023, so just 4 months ago. And it's interesting that it's exactly the same methodology. They've used the same outcome tools, but instead of 45 participants, they've had 35. And they've used three insoles, but one of them was different. They haven't used the Superfeet. They've used something they called a foam insole. So, Craig, unpick some of this for me, from a sort of a research logistics perspective.
Well, my first comment is on the funding by the company whose product came out on top. Now, that means we've always got to look at that and consider that, but at the same time, you've got to trust the integrity of the researchers. They're not going to risk their reputation by doing something dodgy to give the funder the outcome they want. So again, but at least they did declare that, and that's not an issue. As far as the analysis goes, I don't have any issues with that. It would be nice to have a lot more information on the participants. What I'm somewhat uncomfortable with is that they obviously did what appears to be an interim analysis to present the results at a conference. And then I presume, as that interim analysis was done for that conference abstract, they were continuing to recruit and continue on. I'm hoping that they didn't change the insole material. It's just a terminology issue in the final paper versus the abstract. They just use the. I'm also somewhat uncomfortable with the title, in that, the role of insole material. I mean, they found the carbon fiber insole did better. Well, you could use a carbon fiber insole of a different shape, and it could have done worse. Or you could have used a PU with a different shape or a different density. It might have been nice to have called the paper "The Role of Three Different Shaped Prefabricated Orthotics in Plantar Fasciitis." That would be, which is really what it was. They obviously used the Superfeet and the Etrex, or however you pronounce that. I've never really known that how to pronounce that properly. But which one did they use? They could have used the high arch one, the low arch one. They come in different densities and different shapes. So the key take home for me here is not necessarily which of the products were better, but there are differences between prefabricated foot orthotics and plantar fasciitis. So if someone's going to do a study on custom-made orthotics versus pre-made orthotics, the choice of pre-made may affect the outcome. And that's the take home I get from this.
Yeah, you've made a good point about the title there. It possibly oversells the role that the material played as
Yeah.
the key
Well,
variable.
the shape and the density to me are what's key, not the nature of the material. I could make the same shape and density out of a wide range of different materials.
Good. So don't everyone rush to give their plantar heel pain patients Victory prefabs just yet, perhaps. But But yeah, an interesting study, which we will obviously link to in the show notes, as we say every week. Article number two, this was published just last week on the 23rd of April by a group of researchers from the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, and in a really high impact journal in Nature Scientific Reports, which is open access. And this is a lovely little paper. It's called Transient Pain and Discomfort When Wearing High-Heeled Shoes. Now, I'm pretty certain we've talked about high-heeled shoes on at least one Podchat Live before, and I know there's multiple papers that or many, many papers out there published on it. But this is quite a tidy little study, which I'll quickly summarize. 50 females, all of whom were between 20 to 30 years old and are described as habitual high heel wearers. They've given them heels and they have essentially asked them to record their pain scales on a 0 to 10 numerical pain rating scale, a visual analog scale, every hour for 6 hours. And they've kind of crunched all of the numbers and again, I'll leave you to go and seek out the paper and look at it yourselves. But let me summarize the findings. Some of these, I suspect, won't surprise heel wearers. They probably won't surprise those of us who aren't heel wearers. But pain in the back, pain in the heels, and pain in the metatarsals increases with the increased time that you wear heels. But there was some lovely little kind of thresholds that were pulled out from the analysis. And that was that if you wear heels for over 3.5 hours, the pain will significantly increase. And if the heel height is 7.5 centimeters, so that's 3 inches or more, that 7.5, 3 inches appears to be the threshold for when pain becomes significant. So implications here for saying, if you keep the heel under that threshold, and if you keep the time worn under the 3.5 hours, then you might not experience quite so much pain. And what I love about this is it's completely at odds with that Daily Mail clickbait headline that we always see that just tells people high heels are bad. And for many years, I'd see women in the city that would come in and they would almost go, "Oh, I know I shouldn't wear heels." I was gonna pass judgment, or there was some kind of morality associated with wearing shoes. I mean, that's how indoctrinated I think in society heels were talked about so negatively. And this is saying, you know what, like everything in moderation, including moderation. So yeah, I quite enjoyed this study, Craig.
Yeah, no, look, this was nice. It was tidy. The analysis is good. I have no issues there. Interestingly, reading between the lines, I think they were looking for a dose response type, which they didn't quite get, but that's okay. But the data, it does quite clearly show 7.5 centimeters is sort of a cutoff point. I'm not sure we should be advising patients to go to 7.5 or go down to 7.5, but no, look, you're very happy with it. A lot of research done previously on the effects of high-heeled shoes is usually biomechanical, not necessarily pain-related or plantar pressure-related or something like that. So it's nice to have some, say, symptom data on the height relating to the height of the shoe or the heel height of the shoe. So yeah, no, nice study.
Yep, lovely. Finally, paper published just the day after that last paper. So this one was published 24th of April, 2024, in Sports Medicine. Once again, open access. So if you go to our show notes and click on the link, you'll get the full paper. This was big data. I think we've talked about big data before and how much it excites us. 17 authors on this paper. That's because, I mean, it was a monster piece of work. And these are authors from Finland, from Croatia, from the UK, from Australia, to name the main countries they were from. 17 feels like a lot, but this was a big bit of work. It is called Health Benefits of Different Sports, a systematic review and meta-analysis of longitudinal and intervention studies, including 2.6 million adult participants. So systematic reviews, meta-analyses, they're massive bits of work, they're level one evidence, and this is big, 2.6 million participants. Their goal was ultimately to systematically review, summarize, appraise all of the evidence on physical health benefits of participation in different recreational sports. Huge bit of work, incredible amount of analysis and statistical work goes into it. I won't pretend to understand it all myself, so I'm going to go straight to the key points. because I think some of these are really, really interesting. So key point number one, they found a reduced risk of all-cause mortality associated with cycling, down 21, minus 21%, running, minus 23%, and swimming, minus 24%. So big reductions in all-cause mortality for cycling, running, and swimming. I can just hear the triathletes that are listening rejoicing they may be getting triple benefits here for being such beasts. They also found running improves body composition, cardiovascular function at rest, cardiorespiratory fitness, which is no surprise. Basically, running makes you fitter. It makes you look a bit better when you're naked. And swimming also improves body composition and blood lipids. But lots of other stuff. There was stuff about football as well, but being kind of a bit more running, I guess, being our bias, pulling out one of the other things they mentioned about running, which I thought was interesting. We've already said it reduced the risk of all-cause mortality by 23%, but it reduced cancer mortality by 20% and cardiovascular mortality by 27%. I mean, musculoskeletal injuries being sustained aside, it's an incredibly potent bit of work supporting just the health benefits of running.
Well, the health benefits of any sport. But I read that bit there, running reduces the cancer mortality by 20%. That's like, wow, that's a massive amount. Your chances of dying from cancer if you're a runner are reduced by 20% if you get cancer. Like, you just got to sort of, this is, again, a massive piece of work, and it's awesome. And really impressive. I know I shared it on my social media a few days ago when I first saw it, because it is that. Play sport, simple as that.
Yep. Play sport, you'll be healthier, you won't, you got less chance of dying, and you'll look better without your clothes on. I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
I think there's something we've already known, but now we know the strength of the evidence that supports that. And that's the key now.
Yeah, and I think if you're listening to this episode and you're thinking, we've just talked about the last two papers we've just talked about, both been published in the last 6 days, and what we're basically saying is running is good for you and keeps you healthy, and wearing high heels for too long makes your feet hurt and your back hurt. It doesn't sound like massive science, and it doesn't sound like real hot off the press stuff, does it?
No, but it's the strength of the data now supporting that, and that's key.
More importantly, if you're a student listening, and I know we've got lots of students listening, and you're writing, assignments for university, dissertations, these are good references. These are references that you should, bookmark, because you might want to lean on them in some written work. Great. Craig, I think that probably wraps up this week. Just want to close by saying, as I always do, thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks for the messages. Keep them coming. We are PodChat Live on all the social media channels. Our email is getinvolved@podchatlive.com. Thank you to the three people on Spotify that rated us since last week, went out to 69 ratings. I've given up on the Apple listeners, Craig. They're just disinterested. So I'm not even going to, it's like having two children. You're not supposed to have a favorite, but I'm absolutely stating that Spotify listeners are my favorite until the Apple people pull their fingers out. So we'll be back next week. I'm actually away I'm flying to Canada late tomorrow, and I'm away, so, and I land back on, I think, Monday next week, so there's a small chance for next episode I might be jet lagged like I was last week. Just pre-warning, Craig, just to give you a heads up. Hopefully I've brought the energy back this week, but I could well be jet lagged, Griff, next week. So I apologize for that in advance.
No worries, great. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you next week, and enjoy Canada.
Take care, mate.